Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Really try to take it one game at a time. I think it's 16 one-game seasons. We're really not thinking about last week, other than what are the things that we can improve on that carry over to this game.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
I don't care how bad it's been around here for the Texans. I love a good Football Friday. I love it. Last night, though, there was Football Thursday, and we saw two quarterbacks, Ryan Fitzpatrick in particular, Clint. And yeah, we jumping right into this. Ryan Fitzpatrick in particular, Clint, you watched and said, Deshaun's got to at least be able to do the things that Ryan Fitzpatrick is doing.
Yeah, man, look, he was 18 to 20 for 160 yards and two touchdowns. But more importantly, just the I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting at Twin Peaks and I look up at one of the many TVs that I was surrounded by. And I look up and I'm going, that's a nice little 8-yard throw right there on the little box route.
So they had other views there. Huh?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the views I'm talking about is the TVs, the beautiful, you know, HD TVs. You know what I mean? That's what I'm talking about. But yeah, I mean, you look up there and you go, oh, that's nice little 8-yard toss to Parker right there. Boy, that sure was easy. And then you turn around and it's, oh, that was another little nice little back shoulder stick route to Parker. That was nice. Oh, look at Jaheim Grant, little tailback or utility back from Texas Tech that's been in Miami for a couple of years. That was a nice little grab by him over on the sideline. I mean, it's just some of those just little bitty easy. Hey, the corner's soft. Let me just take that throw right there. It's nothing major. It's nothing that's going to make a highlight reel. But there are things that I believe that the Texans have taken for granted on the offensive side of the football. They have not worked hard enough to get those kind of looks. And Deshaun Watson has to do a better job of taking those particular throws to make his job significantly easier. You look at what Fitz did. Like I said, he was 18 of 20 for 160 and two touchdowns. But his number one receiver got touches. Parker with 5 catches for 69 yards.
Of course he was.
Big athletic tight end had 1 catch for 15 yards and a touchdown. Don't know his first name. Gesicki's his last name. And Grant had one nice catch. It's just those little things between the 20s that – if you'll just take them, boy, it'll open up those shots. Boy, it'll back that pressure off just a little bit up front. If you'll just be disciplined and take those throws. And I can't tell you how many times I look up and I'm just going, man, if Fitzpatrick can do that, damn, Deshaun got to be able to do it in his sleep. Man, if Chan Gailey at about 98 years old as an offensive coordinator in this league, if he can do it.
Is that who the offensive – Chan Gailey is still collecting checks in this league?
I'm pretty sure Chan Gailey's the guy in Miami.
Oh, my. I'm sorry. I did not know – Chan Gailey was still getting money.
If Chan Gailey's old offensive mind can get Parker, who's by far, I believe, Miami's best receiver, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, if you can get him an easy, you know, soft corner where you're just throwing him the stick route at 8 yards deep and you can get that easy gain, hell, he might make him miss a tackle and go for a big gain. But, boy, if you can get those kind of easy throws, with that being really your one experienced weapon on the offensive side of the football – damn, Tim Kelly ought to be able to do that here with Deshaun all day long. And those are the things that the Texans are missing. The simple things, show the easy things. Sometimes they're making it so damn difficult to do right now.
I feel like there are people right now riding around or at their office tripping and falling out of their seat to get out and say, yeah, but he did it against the Jags. It was Jacksonville they did it against. Fair, but I think the point you're making is even though they played two great opponents in the Chiefs and Ravens, those easy plays, those consistent, you got to make them, man. You got to hit those open, especially as good as you are.
Yeah.
They're not consistently being made.
Well, there's no doubt about
it. It don't matter who it is. If it's Jacksonville or Baltimore or whatever.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Jacksonville's not Baltimore and Kansas City. But when you look at it, if you check the film, hell, you can check the game tape. You can see where there were times when Baltimore had zero deep help, and they had two corners, two cover defenders that were, you know, eight yards off the receiver and backpedaling at the snap. There has to be something where you just go, hey, man, I'm going to pop this bubble out here to Cooks in the slot and let Fuller block the most dangerous man and go get a for sure six. And if you get eight, I mean, if you get a missed tackle, all of a sudden you get 15. There's multiple times in the first two games where that's there and it's not just an immediate go-to right now. Now, I don't know if Deshaun has that luxury or not, if he has the freedom to do those things or not, but I just can't help but watch other offenses, whether they're good or bad or whether the opponent they're playing is good or bad. I just have a big-time appreciation for the offensive minds in this game that don't pass up for sure for some more, right? They take those matchups and their system allows their quarterback to go, boom, I see it. All right, I'm giving it to him right now. I'm going to get this quick 5 or 6 yards and huddle up and do it again on 2nd and 4, 2nd and 3. The Texans, again, they just don't do that very often, and it's one of those things that will make Deshaun Watson's job significantly easier if Tim Kelly allows him to do it, and if that's already in the mix, if Deshaun decides to take the liberty and do it, it'll help him.
Clint Sterner in the show right here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. What we're discussing here is we watched Ryan Fitzpatrick last night. Just make the simple play consistently, and that is something, if we're all being honest, Deshaun has not done. And that has to improve going forward to at least pull that off. And I would even push this to you, Clint, not just the simple throws, but just simple plays and decisions expected by a quarterback like him. 4th and 1. You know the play's a bootleg. You see the Ravens have pressure coming and standing at the line of scrimmage on the side of the bootleg, which you know. That means somebody is directly supposed to go with me. And I know this is a bootleg. It's 4th and 1 on my own 38. Either change the play or call timeout and let's do something else. Don't just snap it and run the play anyway. That's a simple play that quarterbacks need to know and can make. And he's got to get better at stuff like that. The 4th and 1 was not a, I guess you could say it's not a, it ended up being not a great play call. Now, if the pressure was on the other side, it would have been a fantastic play call because you're running away from it and it's Deshaun against one person to have to get 1 yard.
Yep.
But if you're the quarterback and you walk up there and you see, okay, they've got two guys, Blitzer standing on the line of scrimmage unblocked.
Yep.
Hell, the end's unblocked. You got to get out of that.
You're 100% right, Joe. That's part of the game that'll never change. That was a rule when I was there. And look, I made the dumb mistake, of leaving a bootleg on into a blitz like that. And sometimes you do get lucky, but more times than not, you get lucky because you didn't get ear-holed and concussed, truth be told. And so, yeah, those are the kind of decisions that either Tim Kelly's got to coach him up better and the system's got to allow him to do it, or he's got to take the bull by the horns and go, you know what, I can't get out of this play, but I'll be damned if I'm going to bootleg into this in a 4th and 1. I got to call a timeout. I'll also take it one step further, show of watching Fitz last night. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, watching him last night on some of the throws that I'm talking about, he would make the throw and the left tackle would get pushed back into his lap and literally be in his face as he's throwing it. But it's a 6-yard completion, so nobody's dog cussing the left tackle for the Miami Dolphins this morning, right? He's getting graded behind closed doors just like they all do, but nobody's dog cussing him talking about this offensive line is overpaid, what the hell's wrong with him. So if Tim Kelly and Deshaun Watson can do those simple things that we see every quarterback, hell, because on the other side of the ball, Jacksonville didn't play well, but Gardner Minshew did exactly what I'm talking about as well. When the play caller and the quarterback get together and they get the football out of their hands in due time, then it I mean, helps the offensive line tremendously. The offensive line goes from needing to protect for an extra second or an extra 2 seconds. Instead of 50% of the snaps, they got to protect for an extra 2 seconds. Maybe that's just 20% of the snaps if you're doing things a little bit differently. Now, you can expect NFL linemen to, hey, you got to hold your water. You got to give me a little extra time. I got to be able to step in the huddle and go, all right, fellas, we're in the third quarter. We're dialing up this shot. I need some extra time, man. I need some extra time right here. Just give me one snap with an extra second, an extra 2 seconds to see the coverage, to let Cooks get deep, and then give me a good view. Just give me an extra 2 seconds, guys. Like that's how this thing's supposed to work. It's not supposed to be going into the game and the guys go, well, hell, we gotta hold them out as long as we can, boys. Every time a pass play's called, we gotta expect him to hold it for 4 seconds. That can't be how this thing works, man. No.
It is a Football Friday presented by Carbox, Hopadillo, IPA, and Ben Roethlisberger for the defensive side of the ball is going to be the focal point, at least to start. Anthony Weaver, the defensive coordinator for the Texans, he spoke on Big Ben yesterday. This is what he had to say.
Well, you know, they're obviously all three of them are incredible quarterbacks. They're just different in play style. Ben, unlike the other two, you don't got to worry about him moving as much. Now, he's still willing, got to have his situation, but for the most part, you know where he's going to be. So up front, those guys love that, right? You can pin your ears back. You can try to win. You don't got to worry about quarterback extension and guys leaving the pocket and gaining 15 yards rushing. But he's obviously seen every coverage imaginable. So you got to do a great job pre-snap of trying to fool a guy that essentially has seen it all. And we got to make sure we try to get heat there because we know where he's going to be. But the challenge is obviously a big one, but we're ready for it.
It is a big challenge. And you asked me earlier this week, what would be your game plan if you were Anthony Weaver to attack Ben Roethlisberger? You've watched tape. You've seen them their first couple of games. Say you. Now, this Ben, after the surgery, what would be your way to attack him?
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple, man. It's as Weaver said, you pin your ears back with Whitney Mercilus, Jacob Martin, P.J. Hall, and J.J. Watt. You pin your ears back. You got multiple games dialed up to get J.J. Watt free. Some of the tackle defensive end twist and some of the moving him around different positions. And you let that dog eat. You tell J.J. right now, hey, the team needs you. The franchise is 0-2. This would be a big-time victory at a big-time moment. We need defensive player of the year, J.J. Watt. If you got it in you for four quarters, now's the time to pull it out and see what you got. So you got to let those guys eat. You got to – the linebackers are – it's a big role this week because the way that Ben Roethlisberger is going to try to defend that pass rush up front is going to be with draws and screens, right? That Patrick Mahomes, sure, they've got all these exotic screens where they fake a wide receiver screen right, a running back screen left, and then throw the damn tight end screen in the middle. There's a lot of trickery involved. This is going to be old school with Ben. Ben knows that the defensive front knows that he's a sitting duck back there 7 to 9 yards deep. And he's going to counter that by running back draws and screens with the tight ends and the running backs behind that first layer of defense, which is J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. And so that's why I believe that Zach Cunningham and Bernardrick McKinney are going to be – and the safeties. And these safeties are going to be critical coming up and playing those screens. And I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd mix up coverages, sure. I'd mix up coverages, but I'd tighten the screws down on this coverage, man. I'd force Big Ben to throw it over the top. Hey, if he hits you with two long touchdowns, that's fine. No big deal. What you can't afford to do is go out there four quarters and think that Ben Roethlisberger is not going to take what you give him and let him just go 10 and 12 and 14 play drives because he will do that as well.
I think, yeah, I'm with you. Press the issue. Press the issue and force things yourself. All right, I got a test question for Texans fans. What if Houston rolls in and they beat the Steelers on Sunday? Would it change how you feel as a fan? We'll help you figure that out coming up next.
Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
All right, jump in, Houston, or whoever, wherever you are, 713-572-4610. Tyler will get you going. You can text in as well. I want to hear from the people. Here is the question. Let's say the Texans beat the Steelers. They go to Pittsburgh, and they win the game. Where are you as a fan? Are you in a place where you are, all right, I'm back to believing. I'm here. Okay. All right.
I'm so excited.
I see some. They won at Pittsburgh. Or are you? All right, man. It's a fluke. It's a fluke. Nah, man. That ain't. You ain't going to get me. You ain't going to trick me. You ain't going to get me. Because, Clint, fans are just looking for just a sliver of hope. I can see it in Tyler's eyes. A sliver of hope. Let them, you could be, oh my God, look how bad they looked against Kansas City. Oh my God, look how bad they looked against the Ravens. Let them walk in there and beat Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers when my man over here, Clint Sterner, has been telling you that Steelers are potentially a Super Bowl level team. Let them win. All you need is a sliver. Where are you as a fan if they go in and beat Pittsburgh? Where would you be, Clint?
It'd give me a great opportunity to tell everybody I told you so, actually, is what do. I mean, look, it would be a great W, but I've told you from Jump Street Show since I met you, man, this team's awfully talented. They can beat anybody on any given Sunday, but the sad part is you don't know what's going to come out of the locker room. They're so inconsistent. And they are until they show me that they have grabbed the floor of this organization and brought it up to a point that they don't play down to their opponents, then the Texans are going to be the Texans to me. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't beat Pittsburgh. It wouldn't surprise
me. This group.
It wouldn't surprise me. Pittsburgh's a good football team. I think the Texans got better last week. There were opportunities on the field for that to be a one possession game in the fourth quarter. And as ugly as they played ball, it very likely could have been a one possession game at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Yeah. So I mean, it's not as bad as it may seem when we break it down for 4.5 days and we're tearing a loss apart, justifiably so, tearing it apart. But when you really look at it, you go, "Hey, man, if Deshaun makes one of the big plays at the end of the third quarter, that's a one-possession game." So it's still a football team that's playing bad ball, but they're not as far removed from being in the thick of things as you might think, which is what we've said from the jump. But I've told you, Shodell, that the inconsistencies is what will absolutely scare you. Last year, out of the gate, Monday Night Football, New Orleans Saints. Field goal. New Orleans Saints had to kick a field goal with no time on the clock to win 30-28. Hell of a game by the Texans on a big stage and under the brightest lights. Next week, Jacksonville. Jacksonville comes to town. You got to stop a 2-point conversion to win 13-12. Right? Then you go to the Chargers. Stink it up in the first half. Come out dominating the second half. Win a good game. At that point in time, we thought the Chargers. That's Phillip Rivers. That's a good W right there. That's a future Hall of Fame quarterback. 27-20. Next week, Carolina, Kyle Allen. You lose 16-10. Look like an offense that just the second half of the Chargers, Los Angeles Chargers game. Boy, that's your coming out party. I mean, you couple that with the New Orleans Saints game offensively, fireworks, explosion everywhere. In that Carolina game, you're like, what in the hell happened there? Kansas City, you go on the road, week six, that is. You win the game. Next week, Indianapolis, 30-23. I mean, you win big games. You win big games, and right when you go, hey, man, this team's right there.
But don't you have to –
the ceiling, the floor just sinks. You beat New England. You beat New England. Best game plan I've seen for the Texans. Next week, Denver's up 35-3 with 9 minutes left in the third quarter. It's always possible that they can come out and be ready to whoop tail, but on the flip side of that, it's always possible they can come out and mess the bed. And so it would give me an opportunity. If they were to win this game, your point is, what does this game do? It would give me an opportunity to go, show. I told you so.
See, okay. Obviously, Clint is making this about himself, which is not, and Lauren knows, this is not abnormal. But if you're just jumping in, I want to hear from you. 713-572-4610. I see the text line coming through. You can call in Tyler to get you set up. If the Texans rolled into Pittsburgh and went and got a win today, where would it put you? Would you be in a place of, all right, baby, I'm back. I'm back and believing, or would you be at a place of, no, this is a fluke. No, you're not going to trick me. You're not going to get me excited into thinking differently than I think right now about this football team. All right, I'll give my thought, but I do want to say, is it fair to say maybe you got to throw, from what we've seen the first two games with this group, I almost feel like you got to throw what they've done before out. This group doesn't even appear they could go get the Bengals right now. Like You know, you say they could be up and down. Yeah. Hell, I got to see some semblance of a potential up. Like, it is hard to see that.
Right, and this
is a guy who's picked them to go 10-6. So I almost look at like, man, I know they've been up and down last year, but they have not shown that they should be on the field with these two teams. This is another team that is within that ilk. And my thought would be, like, if they went and beat the Steelers, for me, I would be on the, wow, that's a performance that shocked me almost from what I saw the first 2 weeks. I'm not willing to go like, all right, I'm believing back into where I was and they're going to win the division, win 10-11 ball games. I'd be like, that's a big win.
Yeah.
Okay, let me see that again.
That would validate that the ceiling is still fairly high.
It would say, all right, because you could put it in your mind, right? I could see fans right now talking themselves to it. Woo, okay. Maybe they were growing.
Yeah.
Maybe this is some new thing, you got a new defensive coordinator with thoughts. We've seen they haven't been aggressive whatsoever in these first two games. Maybe they got a feel and they changed their thoughts.
Well, we've yet to see the high-ceiling Texans, right, without DeAndre Hopkins. So the jury still is out, really out with this group. Are you capable, hell with being consistent, at this point in time, are you capable of coming out and your ceiling being high enough where you can go toe-to-toe with New Orleans, where you can go and dominate four quarters versus New England, where you can go and you can play I think Pittsburgh is a much better football team than what the Chargers were last year, but you got a Hall of Fame quarterback that's done a lot of winning in his time. You know who he is. You know where he's going to be. They got a good defense, a lot like the Chargers. Maybe probably better than the Chargers as a team, but I mean, there's a comp there. Are you capable, is your ceiling high enough as a team right now, are you capable to go on the road and win that kind of game? And I think Pittsburgh is definitely one of those that you would look at and go, that is a quality win versus a high-caliber football team.
This isn't the Bengals creeping up on your schedule in week three after you just got your ass laced by those two teams. This would at least make you have to step back and say, because this would I think if I were a hardcore Texans fan that is just looking for any reason, Clint, my mind would be like, okay, now I remember they're growing, they're getting to know each other better, and it would just bring the sliver of doubt and the sliver of thing that I would need is we can beat anybody with Deshaun. If you just give Deshaun a chance, we got a chance and we can beat anybody with Deshaun. All right, I want to hear from you, 713-572-4610. If they were to go in to Pittsburgh and beat the Steelers, where would it put you? Would it put you in a place of, all right, I'm back to believing, or, I'm not going to be tricked. Dan, go ahead and lead us off. Go ahead. What's your thoughts, Dan?
Hey, is that me?
That's you, baby.
You're Dan, I think.
All right. Hey, look, I love the show. I love the chemistry between you guys, but I couldn't agree more with Clint. Look, I watched that Miami game, and I see Fitzpatrick doing the simple things and leading his team up and down the field. But on top of that, I see him doing design run quarterback plays that Deshaun can do in his sleep. And if the Texans end up 0-3, but they played competitively and they had a good game plan and they just came up short and got beat by a good team, then I feel better than that. But they're not doing that. They're not living up to their potential. They're not putting Deshaun in the best light to do what he's capable of. And that's where I'm having a problem with the schedule and the record that they're at now.
All right. Appreciate your call, Dan. That's fair. I'm just trying to see where people are. I mean, the text line, I see you jumping in. I need to see more. They would have me if they beat the Steelers from the text line. This team has consistently played down to inferior teams and folded when playing superior teams. This team needs to play and win multiple well-coached games before I believe. All of that is fair. I mean, they've played down. They've been inconsistent because they've not routinely played folded when they played superior teams because they played their asses off.
I think in 2019 they proved that they can beat really, really good football teams. They can out-coach people. They can play good, clean, efficient brand of football on both sides of the ball. They can overcome injuries. the way that Romeo Crennel was able to do last year in the playoffs. But look, there's been some turnover in the roster. Predominantly speaking of DeAndre Hopkins, and I think Hop had a big part in the Texans' ability offensively to go out and do those kind of things versus New England and versus New Orleans and versus some of the teams that year in, year out are in the Super Bowl conversation. I don't know that this football team, particularly the way the offense is structured, I don't know if they've got the ability to do that. I don't know that this play caller and this wide receiver group and this quarterback and this offensive line, we don't know if they have the ability to play at or above their ceiling and if that is good enough to beat a good early season Super Bowl contending team that you know the Texans could do last year. So really, to hell with the being inconsistent. I mean, to hell with that, right? I mean, at this point in time, you got to go out and prove that you've got a ceiling high enough with this group to compete with the powers that be.
They haven't played functional football on offense.
Right.
Let's see that. All right. Brooke Pryor, who covers the Pittsburgh Steelers for ESPN, we'll get from her the potential weaknesses for the Steelers that the Texans may be able to take advantage of. She covers this team very, very well. She'll be able to help us out with that. Brooke Pryor of ESPN coming up next.
Here's Clint Sterner and the show.
That's right, a Football Friday here in Houston. And we got to go and get at least get some thoughts and words on what the Steelers have and what the Texans have to face with the Steelers. And no better way than to go to Brooke Pryor, who covers the Steelers for ESPN NFL Nation and does a great job with them and knows this team inside and out. And, Brooke, I need you to help us before we really get into the meat and potatoes. I need you to help us out with something. We were kind of going back and forth on how you pronounce the right tackle's name for the Steelers. Now, I like the pronunciation that I go with, but when I heard Clint, what he thought it was, I feel like he's right. But for me, it is Chukwuma Okafor. I really okay. That's wrong. The way you busted out laughing.
Hold on, Chuck, no.
It says C H U K W U M A. Chukwuma. That is beautiful.
I love the energy. The energy is great.
Yes.
I just circumvent that question and I can't figure it out. So we all call him Chooks. So he goes by Chooks Okorafor.
Oh, it's Okorafor. What do we call him, Okafor?
No, there's an R in there. I didn't know if you accidentally typed that in yesterday, if that was really how you spell it. I'm careful when I'm reading off the rundown.
What was yours, Clint? What did you think it?
It's Chukwuma. I mean, that's how my running back in college spelt his last name exactly, and it was Chris Chukwuma.
Chukwuma.
You can like really put an emphasis on the W if you want to.
That's Chukwuma. What I am.
But I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Chukwuma.
I don't know about that right
that
there. You've been watching too many Disney movies with the kids.
Chukwuma. Yeah. All right. No, but we have fun with his name. But he's got a big matchup for him this week as the right tackle, and that's predominantly where J.J. Watt lines up. How concerned are the Steelers with that potential matchup? Because I know they loved their right tackle who went down against the Giants. And that's a big loss for them. How concerned are they with this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, Dukes has a tall task, and I mean, I'm not breaking any news here with that. I think that they really liked Zach Banner, but this battle between Banner and Okorafor really went down to the week of the first regular season game. That's how close it was. So I think that they feel okay with Okorafor stepping in there. The bigger issue to me is just that if anything were to happen, you're playing against such a physical player, they have no depth on the offensive line, or at least no depth that you'd feel good about. I mean, you've got Kevin Dotson, who's more of an interior guy, that stepped in last week when they were down to their third string right guard. In theory, he's a body that you could put there, but the guy that you really want to fill in all the spots, Steven Wisniewski, is on IR with a pec injury. But I do think that for Okorafor, the biggest benefit to him is that he's already seen a lot. He sees a lot every day in practice in TJ Watt, and that is a tough matchup. He's, you know, there. He's TJ is not going to treat Okorafor the same way that JJ Watt is going to treat him in the game on Sunday, but he at least got a taste of that physicality through training camp. And I think if they didn't have a Watt that he was going against, you'd be a whole lot more worried about this matchup. But I think that they are cautiously optimistic about how he'll do and how he'll protect Ben Roethlisberger.
Brooke, if you like NFL football, you've clearly watched Ben Roethlisberger for a long time now, so you know what he's about. But after missing last year, he's long in the tooth, man. He's at the end of his career. I heard an interview, I don't know which game, which one of the first two games it was after, but it seems to me, in just listening to him talk post-game, that it's a little different version of Ben Roethlisberger. What do you see different in the Ben that's come back this year after injury and is really playing for the love of the game and the love of being around his teammates?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing a guy who's maybe not as arrogant as he was before. I mean, obviously, to play at the level that you're at, you have to have a ton of self-confidence. But to me, I see more of the evolution of Ben as a leader and as, like you said, playing for the love of the game. You know, last year before he got hurt, his big emphasis was being a leader in a locker room post-AB and post-Le'Veon Bell. And then he didn't really get that chance because he got hurt. And to me, the first thing that jumped out was after the Broncos game, he took all the blame for the interception, for some of the missed passes. He said, hey, my receivers were exactly where they needed to be. This is all on me. I just didn't throw the ball the right way. I need to trust them more. I have to build that connection. There was no blaming a receiver. You know, maybe he could have fought for the ball more or come back to it, anything like that. And to me, that says that this is a guy that recognizes he needs to really foster that connection and that relationship with these young receivers, because just demeaning them and saying, well, they've got to do this better and they've got to do that better, that's not going to help your relationship, and that's not going to help you be successful in the last couple years of your career. So he's really gone out of his way to strengthen that relationship, and not he gives constructive criticism. I mean, he'll still get after guys. He got after them Thursday in practice. He wasn't happy with his receivers. The guys weren't finishing routes, and he let them know very vocally that that's what was happening. But at the same time, in the same practice, he specifically focused on Deontay Johnson to work on that connection and was throwing just about every ball his way just to get that repetition in. So I think you're seeing a guy, as offensive coordinator Randy Buechner said, he's not an old dog that you can't teach new tricks. You can still teach him. He's still learning, and he's still, you know, he's having a lot of fun with the game.
What about this receiving core? Talk to us a little bit about these guys. What does each one of them bring to the table?
Yeah, we were actually talking about it today at practice. It's crazy how deep the Steelers receiving core is, and they don't necessarily have a lot of marquee name brand guys. I mean, obviously you've got Juju Smith-Schuster, Deontay Johnson's coming on strong. I think Juju right now is really benefiting because Deontay has developed more and is getting such a huge, huge amount of targets at this point. Juju's able to play in the slot, and he's able to kind of, some things are opening up for him the way that they were last year when Deontay was just a rookie. And Deontay can be a real game breaker. He can be a deep threat. He's a fast guy. I think that he's a guy that's going to eventually be the top wide receiver on this team and allow Juju to be kind of in a supporting role, which isn't what you would think Juju would be good at because he's a guy that likes spotlight, but I think defensively that's what will help him out the most. Then you've got James Washington, who's an incredibly physical receiver. You've got Chase Claypool, has 5 catches on 5 targets in that touchdown. And even in tight ends, you've got Eric Ebron, who hasn't had many targets yet, but he's definitely capable of being involved. So it's a really dangerous receiving core when you start thinking about it.
Brooke Pryor, who covers the Steelers for ESPN NFL Nation. Let's move to the other side of the ball. Listen, the Texans have struggled mightily offensively, but from the first two games, the Steelers have looked like one of the best defenses in the league. Now, I was a little surprised that Jeff Driskel, once he came in, was able to have the success he did. Where may the Steelers be vulnerable defensively?
Yeah, you know, the Broncos started to have more success when they were getting Noah Fant, the tight end, involved. You know, some of the linebackers were struggling in coverage. You've got a guy like Devin Bush, who is a good player, but that's still an area that he's working on. And I think that if the Steelers attack, or if the Texans attack that, attack some of those weaknesses, you know, the Texans also went away from the ground game I'm getting all my teams mixed up. The Broncos went away from the ground game in the first half, after the first half, and Melvin Gordon was really getting some good runs off. I think if the Texans get a run game established, don't pull away from that. You know, the Steelers were talking about this week that they respect both Duke Johnson and David Johnson as guys that could really do some damage. So between that and really involving some big tight ends, I think that those are some areas where the Steelers can be vulnerable. But like you said, I mean, this is a really good Steelers defense. They're blitzing at just essentially a championship level rate at this point. I think it's like 64% of the time they're blitzing, and the rest of the league is averaging, I think, 28%. It's just the way that they are playing right now is really making up for the offense still coming together with Ben. And they're covering up a lot of mistakes. The biggest thing for them is just to stop being penalized. But they did have officials out at practice this week to kind of work through some of those things. So hopefully they play a cleaner game on Sunday.
All right. Real quick, before we get you out of here, Brooke, what's it like to cover Mike Tomlin every day? That seems like a joy. He seems like he just is right off his sleeve with his emotions and very honest. What's it like to cover that cat?
He is, you know, he's so funny because he can be so emotional on the sideline, but a lot of times when he's talking to us, and especially now in a Zoom camera, he's very poised and collected. But my favorite moment recently where we really got to see the real Mike Tomlin was post-game on Sunday. We're all, you know, trying to make the Zooms work in the press box, and we have one mic that doesn't open up when they needed to, and then another one opened up beside the sky, and he just cursed. He was so mad that it wasn't working, and it got caught on the hot mic, and Mike Tomlin's eyes just bugged out of his head. And he was like, hot mic, live mic.
What was the cuss word? I know you can't. What was
It was a four-letter one that starts with an F.
Oh, I gave him the big one.
Yeah, he was in practice mode already. Hey, Brooke, I don't know if you're a fantasy football player or not, but if you were, are you starting Benny Snell or are you starting James Conner this week?
Oh, man, I am a fantasy player, and I gave a friend some bad advice last week and said to start Benny Snell instead of James Conner, and that did not go great. So this week I'm going to go back to saying start James Conner. I mean, they want him to be their bell cow back. He's healthy. Benny Snell has some ball security issues. And so I think right now, until James Conner gets hurt again or gives them a pretty significant reason to put him on the bench, they're going to stick with him. You know, Benny Snell might be the running back of the future, but he's not the running back for right now.
Brooke, thank you so much. That's Brooke Pryor, who covers the Steelers for ESPN. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the understanding of the Steelers and where – I don't know, maybe the Texans have a chance somehow.
Well, thanks, guys, for having me on.
All right, that's Brooke Pryor, ESPN. That's maybe the fourth time I've heard, Clint, or the tight ends can get them. And Noah Fant heard them. Ingram for the Giants heard them. That's like that. I heard this morning they had Filippone on
who?
Filippone, that pony, you know, pony. He covers the Steelers. He's
an
afternoon host. And they had him on Payne and Pendergast, and he also said the running backs out of the backfield and the tight ends are an issue for the Steelers, and that's the place where teams have had success.
Yeah, and I think that's when you blitz a lot, Show. I think when you blitz a lot and you got some pretty good players in the secondary, the way that teams want to attack you is probably going to be at the linebacker level, probably going to be one of the two safeties. And the fact of the matter is this, is the Texans are going to have their hands full protecting Deshaun Watson. But when they do spread this team out, and look, I don't think this is an empty team. I still don't believe this is an empty football team. I think you stay in 11 personnel or you stay in 20 personnel, and you can really do work out of that way. You can seven-man protect or you can empty protect, and you've always got the defense guessing of what you're trying to do. And in situations where you want to attack the linebackers, so to speak, that's when you empty the backfield. But you do it out of a look where David Johnson's out of the backfield, Jordan Akins is out of the backfield, or he's in that cock position 1 yard off, 1 yard behind the tackle, and you attack from that position. They think you're going to protect. They're going to blitz. Boom, you bang them with the best mismatch you have, which a lot of times is interior-wise with these linebackers. I forgot the Pittsburgh Steelers had Bush too.
Oh, in the middle? Yes. You don't remember that suit he wore?
Yeah, no, I remember that. When she said it, I was like, I'll be damned. I'd forgot all
Devin
about
Bush? Yeah,
yeah, I mean, they got some monsters.
They got a crew over there now. I tell you though, what she did say really got me. Anthony Weaver, please be aggressive this week. They're down two starting offensive linemen. I know Stefanowski was a guard who was starting for them in week one, and they've lost Banner, their right tackle. And like she said, they've got no depth at all in the back end. Yeah. They've got potentially an interior lineman who would have to go and play tackle if either one of them went down. Like, be aggressive. They've got two backup linemen in there. Yeah. That's something that jumps out.
Yeah, show. Look, with that being the case, man, this is one of those weeks where you don't have to actually get into their depth. If you just get one of those guys, you know, with a bum ankle, or you get one of those guys with a bum shoulder or bum wrist, and they can't go to their backup, and now you got a wounded duck up front.
Yeah.
Now you can really attack them. So yeah, they're obviously thin up front at this point in time. We knew they were thin at the right tackle position, but after talking to Brooke Pryor, obviously they're thin across the board at the offensive line, and you got a quarterback already.
Yeah.
Look, miss me with all the, well, Ben will run when he needs to. Look, every quarterback in the league will run when they have to.
Tom ran.
Tom went and he's rushed for a couple of first downs. Look, the truth of the matter is Ben don't want to move. Now, he don't mind getting hit.
Yeah.
He'll stand in there and take it on the chin, but he don't want to run around. And if you do get Ben running around and he so does happen to get a first down, then so be it. Keep making him run around. You got him in a good spot.
All right. Friday is generally an important practice day. Two important starters for the Texans did not practice at all today. We'll tell you who they are coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.